When I was in high school, back in the day, we put on a play called Murder in the Cathedral by T.S. Eliot. The play is about the martyrdom of Thomas à Becket. And the play opens up with Becket being tempted. And so the first tempter comes in and tempts him to have many great riches and possessions. And then the next tempter tempts him to have sexual fulfillment. And the last tempter tempts him to have great power. And Becket resists these temptations. And then a fourth tempter shows up, and Becket is very surprised. He expected the world, the flesh, and the devil, but what was this fourth temptation? Well, this little devil wanted Becket to become a martyr, because then he would be famous and he would be renowned and everyone would look up to him. And so Becket realizes the danger in that temptation, because if he doesn't do what he does because it is God's will, it is just all about himself and not about God. And the line is, this by far is the greatest treason, to do the right deed for the wrong reason. So the point of this play is that it's not enough to do the right thing. You also have to know why you're doing what you do, which I think is at least part of what Jesus is talking about today in the Sermon on the Mount when he gives us these contrasts. He says, you know, just don't not kill merely for the sake of not killing, but because of what's in your heart. Don't not commit adultery because it's the commandment, but because what's in your heart. Don't lie because it's who gets you in trouble if you do, but because it's what's in your heart. So what matters then is not so much what we do, but why we do it. But on the other hand, there's a whole school of thought in psychology which says that our actions can, in fact, shape our attitudes, shape the way we think. In behavioral therapy, what you do is you learn how to act in a certain way, and this is going to help you to reshape your mind. So if you act in a way that is confident, in a way that is competent, well then pretty soon you can live into competence and confidence. If you act as if you have a lot of optimism, well pretty soon you'll become optimistic. So the behavioral therapist will take you through this process of role-playing where you will act as if. And if you act as if, pretty soon you become what you have been acting in. As the expression goes, you fake it until you make it. Or as they put it in 12-step program, you can't think yourself into a new way of living. You have to live into a new way of thinking. So which is it? Is it our actions that matter? Or is it our motivations that matter? I mean, if you decide, I'm going to shovel my neighbor's walk because that way they'll think I'm the greatest neighbor ever. Well, even if it's a bad motivation, if you shovel your neighbor's walk, that's pretty good. And he would be very appreciative of that, right? So behavior or motivation? I think when we are asking this question, it's not because of our interest in psychology, but because of our interest in the Bible. And what is Jesus actually trying to tell us when he says, don't murder and don't lust and don't lie. To understand it, I think we have to look at the context, the way Jesus situates these little instructions. He starts off by saying, unless your holiness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Unless your holiness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. So Jesus is interested in us having surpassing holiness. Surpassing holiness. Now, if you think about the scribes and Pharisees, you know they kind of have a bad reputation in our context, but they would have been great neighbors. They would never have a wild party. They would have mowed their lawn. They would never have jaywalked. They would have recycled. They would have been the perfect neighbor. So what is surpassing holiness all about? How do we have surpassing holiness? When Jesus is setting up these contrasts, you know, you have heard, but I say to you, what I think he is really doing is asking us to change from doing the least that we have to do to doing the most that we can do. I think what the Pharisees did, they did what they were supposed to do. Which was great. You do what you're supposed to do. Okay, I fulfilled the law. But Jesus is saying that we can do more. You know, the least we can do is not to kill somebody, but we can do more by not getting angry. The least we can do is not commit adultery, but we can do more by not lusting. The least we can do is by not lying, but we can do more by speaking the truth. So Jesus is saying, can we think in terms of doing more? Just reflect back on Valentine's Day. We just had Valentine's Day, right? Now, you do not in your head say, all right, it's Valentine's Day. What's the minimum I can get away with and not get in trouble with my beloved? You know, if I give one rose, would that be enough, or do I have to give a dozen roses? Is Hershey's good enough, or do I have to go to Godiva? You know, you just don't think that way. When you love someone, you don't think in terms of the least, but you think in terms of the most. What can I do to really demonstrate my love? And I think that is something in there. Is what Jesus is wanting us to understand, that when you love, you do more. You just don't do the requirement. You do more. There's a play, a chorus line, and there was this great song, What I Did for Love. Diana the Corrine sings about all that she has had to go through, all that she has suffered, the injuries she's endured, the work that she has had to accomplish because she loved to dance. And because she loved to dance, all of that trouble and difficulty was worthwhile. What I did for love. And Jesus, of course, has instructed us that our job as Christians so love God and love our neighbor. And so what do we do for love? You know, it's certainly possible that you're wanting to kill that guy as you're driving down the Dan Ryan and he forces you over and there's this giant tanker truck there that has hazardous material written on the side that could explode all of a sudden in a giant fireball and create a 78-car accident. But because you love him as your neighbor, you don't get angry. You just think about defensive driving. is certainly good. Not to commit adultery with all those fine things that are sashaying down the street. But because you love your spouse, you avert your eyes and have custody of the senses, as we used to call it. And don't even go there. It's certainly a good thing that you don't tell a lie so you won't get in trouble, but because you love your neighbor, you owe it to them to be honest, even if it's going to cost you. So, in our prayer this week, church, what do we do for love?